Beg your pardon?
In school, when you were going to school in...
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. They were all Caucasian friends. Uh-huh.
Were there some Indian children going to school?
Yes. Oh. Yes, there were Indian children. Uh-huh.
Did you find that they were... Did you find them leading different kind of life from you? Or were they all... Since they were all from farming...
I really didn't think. I thought they were just part of my friends, and we played just like they played, and they played like us. If they got up on the horse and played, we went with them playing. Although I couldn't play too much because, see, I did other cooking in the home and cleaning and helping, that I didn't get much time. But, no, I didn't ever think of really... When I came to Elsinore and I saw all these people that were so prejudiced, I couldn't understand, really. And my children the same way. When they went to college, they, like UCLA, my youngest son, he roommate with a colored boy. He didn't think anything of it. A lot of people thought that was something, you know. But he went to school here with all the Caucasian children. He didn't see any difference. Color didn't mean anything to my children, because that's how I raised them. God, you had, I'm going to see them.
Okay, you were talking about the school you had gone to. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you. Before you started to school in California, do you remember what kind of books you read or what kind of books interested you?
Like my mother didn't know English, so she got me Japanese books like Momotaro and Momotaro and Benkei and a lot of those young children's books and stories. I knew most of them when I went to the Japanese school. A lot of them were learning. I already knew it because my folks had taught me those and read, and I knew by writing what the words were and so forth. So it wasn't hard for me. But I didn't read much English because my folks didn't know. And I read some, I read to them, but I translated to them. So that's where my Japanese English comes in.
How old were you when you moved down to California?
I believe it was February I came. So I must be about just hit 13 or 12 or 13 around there. 1928. I just must be about 12 or 13. Must be about 12 when we left Washington.
How did you come down from Washington down to
California? In the car. We had a car. My daddy got a new car. And my father used to always team of horses but never had a car in his life. So when we came to Santa Barbara and those hills in those days, that was 1928, those roads were not so good. And my father had never driven a touring car, Ford. In fact, he really didn't know how to drive a car. He knew how to ride the team of horses. And then when we came to Santa Barbara, we came to the hill, and my father tried to stop the car because it was going so fast. And he kind of carried away, and he hung onto the steering wheel, and he forgot to put his foot on the brake, and he said, whoa, whoa, whoa. And that's all he could say was, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he kept pushing on the brakes, and pretty soon he wore out the brakes, and we almost all died. But my brother happened to be in the back seat, and I was trying to console Daddy. It was not a horse. but he just couldn't get away. We're going to die, or so he kept putting his brakes on, whoa, 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 like that. My brother came down and grabbed a hold of the that brake, and we ran against the hill, and that's how we were saved. And there was my father and mother and four of us. And we came down the hill, and there was a gas station there, and we told him what was the problem, and the man said that it was a garage that he would have the man fix. So I guess that we were there quite some time. I don't recall right now, but we were there some time, and they give us new brakes, and then we proceeded and came more south this way.
How long did the trip itself take, do you remember?
No, I couldn't recall. But I know we left Topnish, that's where my uncle lived, early in the morning, and then we came to Portland. And that's when I first saw the ocean. And we stayed there a few days, I believe. Then we proceeded down to California. I don't recall the other places because really I had to watch the map, help my daddy watch the map and our how to get to California. So the only time I could really recall and I myself was really carried away is when my father about got in an accident, you know, with that brakes. Probably took us a week, maybe.
When you came down to Venice, that's when you started high school.
Mm-hmm. My high school, well, that was my last eighth year. I finished eighth year in Playa del Rey School. Then I graduated there. My high school was in San Pedro. I went 4 years there in San Pedro High School on Gaffey. It isn't there anymore, but that's where I went 4 years.
Did your family move to San Pedro after you graduated from?
Playa del Rey. Mm-hmm. Yes, we went to Terminal Island. And I stayed in Terminal Island till 1939. There were a lot of Japanese. I really didn't know there were that many Japanese. First I thought that's all the Japanese that were in California, but then when I went to Los Angeles one day, to interpret in the hospital, in the county hospital, I saw so many Japanese people on East First Street. It kind of stunned me. I said, my goodness, I thought there was enough in Terminal Island. Because I lived among the Indians and the Caucasian people, that I really didn't think there were that many Japanese.
When you moved to Terminal Island, you lived in Terminal Island?
Yes, yes.
And you said that your father worked for Van Camp.
Mm-hmm, Van Camp, see.
What did he do specifically?
He worked in the, I don't know what you would call, where they put the fish on this big conveyor belt and comes into the cannery. He segregated them to the different troughs. And that was his, basically his work, receiving the fish mm-hmm. from the ship.
Did your mother work?
Yes, she worked in another department where they cut the fish and they cleaned the fish. I remember times my sister, who was a year and a half younger than that, she would put on the boots and trousers and go down there and work there too. She did that type of work while I did the cooking. And
was this the first time your mother went to work outside of home?
Well, besides the ranch?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She worked there until World War II in Terminal Island and different canneries. She basically was van camp, but she worked for a different canning company too.
What was housing like on Terminal Island?
Oh, the canneries gave you the homes, and you. When we first moved there, I think we paid a very nominal fee. They give you a place to stay and live. In the meantime, in return, the parents had to work in their cannery. See.
How big was the house?
3-room. They give you a kitchen. Some people use the middle room almost like a bedroom. Some of them have a lot of children. And the front room is maybe a Davenport, if you were able to afford it. Or the bed was a Davenport, and that was it. I've seen some homes that had 5 and 6 children. And there was bed in every room except the kitchen. And they had... You see, for every 4 or 5 family, they had 1 bathhouse. And the big Japanese-style tub, big redwood tub. And each night, each family took turns making the bath. And it was from wood fire. And when the morning came, if the parents worked, they had to clean that night. Say maybe 1 or 2 o'clock, if they're going to go, when the whistle blew, the cannery, you had to know what whistle was represent certain cannery. But in the, before that, they go to work, they had to clean that bathtub up. Because the next party, the next evening, will start the bath.
How was the sleeping arrangement in your household? You have 3 sisters and brothers, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
And there were your parents?
The girls had the front room. And my brother, my mother and father slept in the middle room. So we had 3 beds. My younger sister was very small, so she'd sleep with us sometimes. She'd go sleep with mom and daddy sometime. Sometimes my mother and daddy worked all night, all day, because in order for this raw fish to be canned, sometimes they couldn't leave it. Because in those days, they didn't put ice or anything. It came through and they cleaned. So lots of time they worked 16, 18 hours straight through. So lots of time when we're in school, my parents were sleeping. And when we're going to school, my parents were still working. We didn't see them.
Do you have any sense of your own space or private space?
No. In fact, my parents were so strict that no boys or even the girls, they were busy with their mother and fathers, because we all had about the same type, the parents worked just about the same shift, and so their children really didn't have much time. In fact, if we were standing in the corner talking to us, a boy, neighbor says, well, to my mother, says, your daughter was standing at the corner of so-and-so's place and talking to a young man. And my mother would question me, who was that man? So that's only really time of social life we had. I couldn't stay. My parents were so poor that we had to make a living, we really didn't have time to join our athletic or tennis or GAA at the high school. Only what we were able to achieve during the class time. We had to come home and take care of the family, clean house, and do the shopping. Though I don't really regret it. Maybe it was good for me. Because what I do now, I don't regret it. I just think, well, that has to be done. These Caucasian friends all say to me, you work too hard. And the men over here at the butcher shop across the market. During the rain, they'd tease me, are you going to cut the lawn today? Are you going to trim the lawn today? Because I do all my lawn and not, it doesn't bother me. I think, well, it has to be done, so I do it. But I enjoy it.
Did anyone in your family particularly do any sewing or?
Yes, my sister next to me. She was a very good sewer. And when she was going to high school in millinery and sewing, she had a scholarship to go to, at that time, called Frank Wiggins. But being that we needed the money and the scholarship wasn't too big, that was in 1933, I believe it was, just after that, Wall Street. And they couldn't afford it, so she goes to work. And she didn't use her scholarship, but she is a good sewer, very good.
Was she responsible for sewing some of the clothes?
Yes, all my wedding clothes. Mm. My clothes, she sewed for my children. She still knits and sews some of the things for my grandchildren. If she feels she want to do it and she has some piece of material, she go when she goes shopping, see she makes it. She sews and I don't know if she crochets now or not, but she does a lot of sewing and does a lot of knitting. She's always knitting. When she's sitting down, she's always knitting. She makes me sweaters and my grandchildren's sweaters and makes my husband's sweaters. But she's a very good in sewing or knitting, very good. During the World War II, she went to Chicago and she worked for a big company. I don't recall what the name was, the company, as a foreman for many years. Then when she comes back after World War II and her husband was in service in Germany, she went to work for a company it was a tin house. It was very hot. I've never been there, but she used to work. She had a foreman. She told this man, if we get the material, and I will get the girls to sew. And the sewing... They made the cribs for Bullocks, May Company. I don't know if she made for Broadway or not, but called, I don't know if they have it now, but it was called Judy Crib. And that she helped them. Then she went back east to put up a factory for the Judy Crib Company. So if it comes to sewing, she's real good.
But when you were growing up, how did you obtain clothing?
My mother.
Oh, your mother sewed.
Mm-hmm. She sewed.
When you were in high school, do you remember what kind of clothes you
Yes, wore? We were Midian uniforms, so she didn't have to sew. It was all Midian uniform. White blouse with the sailor cuffs and pleated skirt and pleated bloomers for our gym. So we had to buy them all, so she didn't have to sew.
This was San Pedro High School?
Uh-huh.
It was a public school?
Yes, public school, but all we had to do is everybody wore Midian skirt. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get the pleats nice like some of the girls because we couldn't afford to take our skirt to the press cleaners. So we put it underneath the mattress and we slept on it.
During high school, what were the things that were important to you?
Well, I don't know. Basically, I guess I was raised in a family where I should look to my mother and father and take care of the help family. So when my studies was done and my work was done at school, the first thing I knew was pick up my stuff on my gym locker and books and stuff for home. Because, you know, if I didn't, my brother and sister would be home without any food and my parents probably be working. So basically my thoughts all the time was to go home.
While you were at school, though, did you enjoy certain subjects?
Oh, yes. I liked foreign language. I took Spanish in high school. I took commercial all the way through with science as my avocation. I wanted to be a bookkeeper or a stenographer where you go to work and make your money and then come home. And then I took this nursing on the side, which was my avocation, but my avocation became my permanent work. So, while I was going to high school, there's another thing too. There, I like to go out and play hockey and basketball, and those days we had to do that after school. We couldn't do it in school time, and that made that I couldn't stay after class. So that was out. But then, since I like to talk to people and help people, the principal, at that time she was an elderly woman, her name was Miss Pierce. And at that, around the time that I was a junior in high school, we had a lot of these Japanese boys and girls that was born in this country had been sent to Japan. And the parents had asked them to come back to the United States. Or some had been over there and the mother had come back to the United States. So they were calling the children. They were, they were much older than I was. Maybe they were about 3-4 years older than myself, and some of them were older. But particularly around 31, 32, there were a lot of Japanese boys that came from Japan. So they formed a one class in San Pedro High School called a foreign language class. And we had most of the Japanese boys in there. There were one or two girls, but very few. And they couldn't speak, and they get in trouble. They're much older. Some of them have already had high school education. Some of them had a couple years of college. But they look at the teacher not as a teacher, but as a... she's just a foreigner and she's trying to teach us. They didn't respect her. So the principal said to me one day, he says, or she says to me, would you like to go to Mrs. Lawrence's class and tell these students a little bit more respect to Miss Lawrence? And I said, what must I say? She said, well, you just discipline. I said, Miss Pierce, I'm just a young student and they're much older. How can I discipline an older student? Well, that's up to you. You do what you think is right. And if not, you call me and I will go and I will help you. I said, okay. So I went to the class. They took me out of study the first time. I didn't know what. Here was a slip of paper, and this study hall teacher comes and says, Miss Pierce would like to see you. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I didn't do anything today. I'm sure I didn't do anything wrong today. But anyway, half scared, I went down, and she says, I want you to sit down. I want to speak to you. So I got scareder and scareder, and I thought, oh, my goodness, what did I do? So she says, young lady, I want you to go to Miss Lawrence's class and explain to these Japanese boys and girls that they have to respect Miss Lawrence because she's their teacher. And if they want to learn English, they don't have to have arithmetic or any math or anything. They have to learn English, how to speak and to write. And that's what they're here for. And that's why we have this special class. And I said, all right. So I went. And I knew what they were talking because I knew Japanese. One fella said to me, after many years, he teased me. He says, we were wondering what a little Japanese girl coming into our room telling us what to do. And I heard them say in kind of rude way, you know. So Miss Lawrence says, Miss Nishida, this is Mitsu Nishida, and she come to speak to you boys. And this one fella I knew, and he was a naughty boy. He says, what's this Baba telling us what to do? So I said to this boy, I said, Nisan, you must not say that to Miss Lauren. She's your instructor. She's your teacher. And if you come to school to learn, you got to obey her instructions, regardless if she's Oba or Baba or whatever you think. But she is your instructor. You have to listen. So they looked at me. And one fellow says, she's born in this country, but she sure can talk Japanese. And so they were just looking at each other. I said, I come here to help you. I said in Japanese, I come here to help you boys because you folks are having problem. I understand you made a spit wad and you shot at the teacher. And all the boys looked at each other and that isn't very nice. You shouldn't do that. Would you do that in Japan, teacher? You throw a spit wad? And so they calmed down. So every other day, I think I went from this, during my study period, I couldn't do my study work. I had to have this class to go. So while I was going, they got better and better. And they got to know me, and I spoke them in Japanese. And I told them that I'm in the same shoes as I. When I was small, I didn't know any English because my father and mother spoke only Japanese. But I had to learn, and I learned the hard way. You folks already went to school. You know your math and everything. I didn't. And my father gave me a potato, and he didn't know what division was. I show him what in the arithmetic book what this, but they couldn't understand. They could give me, they know what the answer is, but they couldn't explain to me how to do it. So my daddy would take a potato and cut it, one potato and cut it, and see, you divide this in two, so that's what you get. And you take four apples, and you cut this in so many pieces, and you have this. And that's how I learned. But you boys have already had. All you have to learn is English. And one of the boys lived just a few doors from me, and his name is Kyoji Nakane. And I said to him one day, Kyoji-san, I said, if you boys want to learn, you can learn in one day a lot of things in 1 week. You can learn. But you folks are making fool of Miss Leonard, and that's why you can't study. You're laughing and giggling. You can't study. But as the days went by, those boys really did all right. They all learned their English, learned to write. And before I was graduating, they were sitting some behind me and some next to me, and they respected the teacher. But when they first came, that was hard. They didn't respect the teacher. And some of them called her Obaba. Sometimes we're working down the campus and they says, oh, here she comes. That's the old instructor. She's not the teacher, she's the instructor. And they, in Japanese, they tease me. But it didn't bother me because I knew I had to help them. Because my father used to say and my mother used to say, when you see somebody needs help, you have to help them. And so it was kind of indoctrinated into my, since I was young.
You had mentioned earlier that when you were in high school, you had wanted to be a bookkeeper or learn shorthand. Did you have plans for working outside of Terminal Island, or what were you?
No, while I was doing this interpreting for the Japanese boys, girls, my principal got me a job with the immigration. So I went down to Outer Harbor time to time with the immigration officers, and I interpret for the immigration. So while I was doing this on spare time, I got a job with a ferry company in Terminal Island, and I worked there. I worked there, and I worked in Dr. Dunbar's office, doctor's office, interpreting and doing nursing work, what I had learned in high school, and till I got married. Oh yes, and then in between. Before I let's see, I was about 15. I went to work, got up about 5 o'clock in the morning, got the PE car, a red car in San Pedro, crossed the ferry, took the red car and went to Gardena. And Saturday and Sunday I worked in a little grocery store. And come home about 10 o'clock at night. And during their Christmas vacation, I went to Hollywood and Vine. And I worked, I got up 3 o'clock in the morning, and I stayed with these Japanese men. There were three of them. I got their breakfast, the three meals, no, two meals for them. And then after I had breakfast, I get on the truck with them, and I went to Westwood. I worked till noon. And then the afternoon, when the truck went down to Vine Street Market, I got on the truck and went down to Vine Street Market and worked 11 o'clock at night. And then come home and then got supper for these men. So I did that, I think I did about 3 years. And then I did in the summer, during my summer vacation too, to help my parents take care of the rest of the family. So I really didn't have really my time for myself. I worked.
When you graduated from high school, what did you do then? Did you go into bookkeeping or?
No, I didn't go to, yes I did too. I worked for this Garbham Walsh, the ferry companies, for about 6 years as a timekeeper. And then we had a head bookkeeper, so I did timekeeping and I did reception work and posting and filing in general. I worked there until I was married too. And then sometime I'd, from the office, my boss was a very good man. He wanted me to go to the immigration station and interpret for the immigration officers because Mr. Walsh and the immigration, I forgot the gentleman's name, but they were very good friends. So I'd go sometime and the bookkeeper and another girl, her name was Katie, they were bonded for the bank, you know, because we had so much money dealing in this office, a small office, just about 12 by 8 little office, but three of us worked there. And when the girls were not there, well, then I would take the cash to the security bank across the Terminal Island. But I never was bonded. The boss trusted me, I guess. I kidded him one day. I said, you know, the rest of the girls are bonded. And he says, I didn't have to put up a bond. He smiled. He says, no, you don't have to be bonded. You just go ahead. So I take the money and go and put it in the bank. And
were the other two born Japanese American?
No.
Oh.
They were Caucasians.
The man who ran the place was
a Caucasian. He was Nova Scotian. He was a Caucasian.
How did you get this job?
Through the high school, from the principal. The immigration, I got the principal. So the deed that I did for the principal to discipline Miss Leonard, I got all these job. Then I went to work for a doctor, Dr. Dunbar, over on 6th Street. He was an Adventist doctor. I got this through a Japanese gardener. He wanted, this doctor's wife had phlebitis. And he asked me if I first work in the office while the bookkeeper was ill. I said, well, I wasn't a full-place nurse yet, but I'd be willing to. He said, that's all I need was the will to help. So I knew how to sterilize and take care of the sick and how to do the books. So I fitted in there for a while. And from there, when the missus had the second son, She got phlebitis. And she was laid up in bed for, I think, 7 or 8 months before she had the second child. And that's when I went to work for them a while in their home.
What year was this about when you started to work for the doctor?
Dr. Dunbar? Oh, I worked for Dr. Dunbar off and on for quite some time, but I don't know how many years I worked there. Because I was going to high school then.
Oh,
I think it was senior year in high school I went to work. But I worked Saturday and Sunday there too, see, while the rest of the children were having fun, I was still working.
Maybe I'm a little confused. So after you graduated from high school, you were working for the ferry company on weekdays?
Weekdays.
Okay, and on weekends you went to work for the doctor.
But see, during the high school time, I worked for the doctor time to time when they needed me. That's why I got to know them. When they had that 1933, was it, the big earthquake in Long Beach? Did somebody tell you about that? Well, at that time, I happened to be at the doctor's home. And Mrs. Dunbar was very upset because we're having an earthquake and she's never been in an earthquake before. And I said, don't worry, just stay upstairs and everything. We only lost a bottle of ketchup. That's all. The doctor came home about 6 o'clock and he saw all the people standing out in the street and he wondered what was going on. He said, come the driveway, and I ran out with a little baby and I said, we're just having an earthquake and they have a call for you from Long Beach that you should come to the first aid station. But they will call us direct if we need more help. By that time, the Avalon and that bridge was not usable, so the doctor didn't go that night, no.
Do you remember very much about the Depression?
Oh, yes. That was 1929. We had come and we were living in Sentinel, there in Venice, and we were just moving to Tumla Island. And I went through Inglewood. There was a minesfield there. That's where the International Airport is now. Yeah. We're going through there, and there was a Bank of America. We went in front of the Bank of America. And there was an elderly gentleman crying and crying, hanging on the door. And we're in this touring Ford, and I said to my father, I said, slow down. I said, there's a man, he needs help. And he says, oh, the bank is closed today. I said, well, today is not a weekend. He said, no, but I understand. I don't think we had radio in those days either. I understand that the Bank of America is having problems, that they closed all the bank. And that's when I first realized the Depression. The Bank of America was being closed, and this man had evidently had money, and he was asking to open so he can get some money. That's the first time I knew that Depression was on.
How did it affect your life, the Depression, if any?
Oh, yes. We had to work harder. There were things that we'd like to get, although I guess that I've known that money was hard to get. That I heard my mother say they only go and get 25 cents an hour working in the seafood, in a Van Camp seafood. And I think my father got 35 cents or something like that an hour. And at that time, I started high school. So we all cinched in our belt and we couldn't get a lot of things that we wanted to get. Although I didn't miss too much, but I remember at that time, I met my husband just as a friend. That was 1929 when he graduated high school. And he was going to cross the San Pedro over to Palos Verdes, and he was going to go and pick peas with all the Japanese ladies, and they were going to get 25 or 35 cents an hour. And that's when I found out the Depression. But since I went through a hard life all my lifetime when I was young, that it really didn't strike me so hard as some of them that really had been living in a more better life than I had.
As you graduated from your high school and you started to work on stuff, did all your sisters and your brother go through high school?
Yes. Uh-huh. My younger sister, June, I think she went to, I don't think she went to high school. She went to Japan in 1936 with us. And I think at that time she was just going to go to high school or had just finished junior high school. And she went to Japan, and she went to Jungako in Shingu. Stayed with my mother's brother family, and she went to Japan. I don't know if she graduated Japanese Jungako or not, but I know she was gone for 2-3 years. She comes back, and she goes back to high school in San Pedro. By that time, you know, let's see, what did I do? I don't recall too much at that little short time what happened then. Because I was working in this Japanese people, you know, taking care of these men, feeding them and working. And I wasn't home very much, so I really don't recall the short time there. I was away from home.
Did your sister go to Japan by herself?
No. We all went back in 1936. My father said to me one day, he said, you know, I'm a poor man. I don't have a lot of things to give you folks or give you a good vacation, but I want to take you to Japan, my home country, and I want you to meet my mother. So we were happy to go. And we went in those days in like Chichibu Maru, Asama Maru. They had what they call third class. It was like a steerage, but it was quite nice. And it paid $75 per person. So we took a trip, and we were gone about 3 months. And that's when my sister went along. And then she takes the entrance exam in Shingu and Jogako, and that's how she gets in.
How did Japan seem to you then?
Fine. One thing, I could speak Japanese, so I didn't have no problem. And I lived in a country, and I knew how to cope myself with the outside lavatory, so that didn't bother me. And nothing bothered me when I went to Japan. In fact, it was much easier. And I cooked Japanese food. My one thing, I went to the country, is, and I went to Katsura, the seaport town. And I saw this Japanese butcher cutting up this chicken, and he was taking all the bones out. And it was just, in those days, when they make chicken sukiyaki, the consumer doesn't buy the whole chicken. They buy the meat. It's all fixed up, unless you had a chicken of your own, evidently. So while I was looking there, he was putting the bones all of them stacked up about that high. So I tell my father, and he was with me at that time, I said, Daddy, ask them what they're going to do with that bone. And so my father asked him. He says, well, we don't have much use for the bone. He says, why don't you buy the meat? He said, well, we're going to buy the meat too, but she wants to buy the bones. So he gave me the bones. Oh, I got a big bundle of it. I got the bones. I went home. And in Japan, you know, they don't have the stoves in those days. They had those regular, you've seen them, the old-fashioned stoves where they have a kind of hole in it and you put your pot in it. Mm-hmm. Well, there were, I asked my grandmother if she had any pot that I could boil water in it and I can make broth. She said, oh yes, we have plenty of them. Sure got me a big one. I went down to the Ido and got some water and started with cold water, and I cracked these bone up and I made a broth. Oh, I made a whole, about a gallon. And I got some noodles at the time, and I had some green onion, and I saw some shiitake, so I put all this together. I made the broth, and my grandmother's watched me all the time. And I took all the bones out, and I threw it away, and the cats and dogs were eating that. And supper time, we had lots of udon. And my uncle come up from, I don't know, he was working in the Yamaha.